This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 5th of January 2024. Hello and welcome to the Winchester Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle, dated the 4th of January 2024. And can I first wish all our listeners, on behalf of us all at the Winchester Talking Newspaper, a very happy new year.
Yeah.
Your readers today are Tony Bergstrom.
Hello.
And John Richards.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, John Parker. The headlines this week are Transports of Vintage Delight, Bishop's baby grandson helps deliver Christmas sermon, and battle is back on over River Park. So we start with the story behind the first headline.
Transports of Vintage Delight. New Year's Day was a day of nostalgia in Winchester, as a fleet of vintage buses transported passengers around the city. Young and old gathered to take rides on transport that, in the past, would have been an everyday sight on the roads. The Friends of King Alfred buses make the most of the quiet streets on New Year's Day, as modern-day bus company Stagecoach does not run services. The charity puts on this running day every year to showcase the work it does in finding, restoring, preserving, and most importantly, running these vehicles. This year was extra special, as the charity has recently seen one of its precious vehicles, a 1950 Leyland Olympic JAA 708, destroyed in a fire which swept through the garage it was being stored in at Penton Musey near Andover. Despite the fire, members remained as enthusiastic as ever and were proud to share their work. Chairman James Freeman enthusiastically spoke about some of the 40-year history, as did one of the bus drivers on the day, Doug Hunt, who was clearly enjoying the spectacle of seeing and driving these historic machines. He joked that the lack of power steering gives the driver a good upper body workout. Prior to 1973, buses in Winchester were run by an independent company called King Alfred Motor Services. It was a unique setup, but in 1973 it was taken over by the National Bus Company. The fleet of Friends of King Alfred buses consists of 16 vehicles, rescued from as far away as the USA. 8 buses from the famous fleet of King Alfred Motor Services, dating from the years 1956 through to 1970, were in service, providing regular journeys on January the 1st over their old routes. Starting from the Broadway, under the shadow of the statue of King Alfred, whose likeness they bear on their flanks, passengers were able to hop on board for free and enjoy rides to Stanmore, Oliver's Battery, Week Estate, Hairstock, Springvale and Winnell, and further afield to Sparsholt, Crawley, Sutton Scotney, Usselbury, Twyford and Colden Common. The next time these vehicles will be on the road will be May the 6th, when the summer run is scheduled. The full fleet will be on show, with buses dating back as far as the 1920s.
Bishop's baby grandson helps deliver Christmas sermon. The Bishop of Basingstoke's Christmas sermon had a special guest this year. The Right Reverend David Williams delivered his sermon on Christmas morning at Winchester Cathedral whilst holding his baby grandson, Atlas David. The sermon, which lasted 15 minutes in total, was about the birth of Jesus Christ. Bruce Parker, chairman of the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, posted on X, "The Bishop of Basingstoke, the Right Reverend David Williams, delivered his whole sermon on Christmas morning at Winchester Cathedral, holding his grandson in his arms. The baby performed perfectly, and guess what? The brilliant sermon was about a baby." And there's a lovely photograph here of the Right Reverend David Williams, the Bishop of Basingstoke, delivering the sermon and holding this absolutely delightful little chap in his arms.
Battle is back on over River Park. Campaigners say the council needs to do more. Civic campaigners are looking to open a new campaign over Winchester's main park. The Friends of River Park have been battling over the future use of the redundant River Park Leisure Centre. The City Council wants to dispose of the building and nearby land to Southampton University on a 150-year lease, sparking an as yet unresolved legal battle. Friends of River Park say the publicly owned land was given to the local authority for leisure use by a covenant in 1902. The campaigners applied for a judicial review, which was refused last year by the High Court, hitting them with legal costs. Now, Friends of River Park, Friends of River Park is to press the City Council to better look after the adjoining River Park, which they describe as a priceless asset to the city. They also say the former leisure centre, which has been boarded up and left in a derelict state, needs to be pulled down. They said, "We will actively pursue the demolition of the building as it is an eyesore." The group launched a crowdfunding campaign on December the 23rd with a target of £8,000, which it hopes will enable it to widen its action to protect the 32-hectare open space. The Friends said, "If Winchester City Council proceeds with their plan, they will hand over control of an important part of the park that currently forms a vital part of the city's main green artery running from Winnell Moors Nature Reserve to St Cross. The area under immediate threat is bounded on three sides by the River Itchen and includes the now boarded up remains of the old leisure centre, which is increasingly derelict and urgently needs to be knocked down and replaced by green grassland until the public can have a say in what happens next. We will actively pursue the demolition of the building as it is an eyesore, a health and safety issue, a magnet for antisocial behaviour and vandalism, and it will continue to cost the taxpaying residents of Winchester £80,000 per year to keep it as it is. In order to protect the park, we're now extending the ambit of our operation to the whole recreation ground to ensure it is properly maintained and managed by Winchester City Council and that no inappropriate development is allowed to take place." They said the cricket pitches, nets and pavilions need replacing and paths need resurfacing. They also criticised mess left behind by large events and raised concerns about part of the car park being allocated for private use. A spokesman for Winchester City Council rejected the idea that their plans will restrict access to the park. They said, "The council is very proud of the much-loved public space at River Park. There never have been, and there will not be, proposals to restrict access for the public to the wider park. It will continue to be part of the city's green artery connecting Winnell Moors and St Cross and will remain in use for wider recreational activities. Only the site of the former leisure centre building and part of the car park are currently in discussions, not the wider park area. Our park plan was developed after hearing the views of over 800 people and we continue to invest in the park. Over £100,000 each year is spent on the maintenance and restoration. In addition to this, in the last year alone, the council invested over £450,000, which included renovating the play area, upgrading the tennis courts, lighting for the 3G football area, and installing toilet facilities. we will continue to invest each year in upgrading and maintaining River Park for all users. That concludes the headline stories, and we've now been joined by Jane Rutter.
Hello and Happy New Year, everyone.
We now continue with the death announcements. Chapel, Vera Rosanna, known as V. Chapel, at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on the 19th of December, aged 105. Hawarden, Llewellyn David, known as Lou Hawarden, in hospital on the 20th of December, aged 77. Malin, Roger Malin, at Basingstoke and North Hampshire Hospital on the 17th of December, aged 79. Mears, Scott Ryan Mears, at Flowerdown Nursing Home, Winchester, on the 5th of December, aged 49. Peak, Brenda Mary Peak, on the 8th of December, aged 82. Sheriff, Donald Sheriff, on the 23rd of December, aged 100. And Thompson, Anne Thompson, née Mortimer, at Brendan Care Otterbourne Hill Care Home, on the 24th of December, aged 89. And now we have Christian Comment.
Christian Comment this week is sharing our news from Nigel Hemming. Every Christmas growing up, I observed my parents write their annual family newsletter to send greetings and keep up with distant friends. It's a tradition my wife and I continued for many years. Every December, we would send greeting cards and share our news with extended family, long-standing friends, and others we'd met along the way. Being a communicator, I always particularly enjoyed summarising the highlights and key developments of the year into one page, and including a few photos to demonstrate how our family were growing. But I haven't produced a newsletter now since 2019, and over the past 2 or 3 years, we, like many others in our life stage, seem to have all but given up sending actual Christmas cards too. I've been reflecting on why this should be the case. Time is one factor, with the pre-Christmas weeks as pressurised as ever, and our grown-up kids can share their own news. But I believe the more fundamental reason is because social media has completely changed the way we communicate with our extended network. These days, Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp make it very easy for us to stay connected with a wide circle of acquaintances at any time. Through photos and video clips, we can share our holiday snaps, picture postcard views, memories and anniversaries, season's greetings, the achievements of loved ones, and our momentous milestones and life celebrations. If we're brave enough, we can also share our challenges, our losses, our grief, our tributes, and our sadness. But, of course, it's important to keep all this in perspective. Social media cannot ever substitute real relationships and face-to-face communication. The non-verbal language in any conversation is just so vital for building empathy and connections. The Apostle John really understood this dynamic. I have much more to say to you, but I don't want to do this with paper and ink, for I hope to visit you soon and talk with you face to face. Then our joy will be complete. John chapter 1, verse 12. Social media is not for everyone, and it certainly has its challenges, but I found it to be a helpful space to share information and updates, and also analysis and emotion, with a much wider circle than I would interact with regularly. And it's not just one-way traffic. When we carefully engage, respond, discuss or share, we can create meaningful interactions that really connect and help people feel included. A guiding principle would be that of Paul to the Colossians. Let your conversation be gracious and attractive so that you will have the right response for everyone. Colossians chapter 4, verse 6. As long as we understand its limits, I believe that social media, used creatively and intentionally, can help us meaningfully share our lives with distant friends, not just at Christmas, but all year round. May 2024 be a year of peace, love, and meaningful conversations for all of us, both near and far. And this was from Nigel Hemming, senior pastor at Winchester Vineyard Church.
Next, we have the letters to the editor. If you yourself would like to send a letter to the Hampshire Chronicle, you can do so by either telephoning 01962 860836, that's 01962 860836, emailing letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, that's letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk, or writing to the editor at 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. That's 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO23 8AL. I think we've got 10 letters this week, and we'll start with the first one now,
which is entitled Truth and Lies, and it's from Philip Glassborough. Referring to your article Lives at Risk, Fear Over Proposed A&E Closure, December the 14th, the chief executive of NHS Hampshire and Isle of Wight Integrated Care Board, Maggie McIsaac, is quoted as saying, "These exciting proposals provide a once-in-a-generation opportunity to improve hospital facilities. How can closing our Winchester A&E department be described as exciting? Tragic? Yes. Misguided? Certainly. But exciting? It's reminiscent of Doublethink from Orwell's 1984, where the Ministry of Truth concerns itself with lies. To shut down an essential department, providing literally a lifeline for a city, and also to downgrade the maternity provision, this is exciting. Second, how can closing our A&E improve hospital facilities? To have no A&E department in a very busy city, with a rapidly growing population through house building in Barton Farm and elsewhere, with a busy university, a prison, a large sixth form college, the railway station, shops and businesses and agriculture, and many surrounding towns and villages which depend on Winchester's hospital." Ms. McIsaac is further quoted as saying that, quote, "The proposals have been designed with clinicians, with patients, and are based on clinical evidence and best practice," unquote. I would be interested to know which clinicians locally, and more importantly, which patients, have helped to design these proposals. How many patients would vote to close our A&E department and our maternity provision in Winchester? And that letter was from Philip Glassborough, Berwick Avenue, Week. There is, after that, an editor's note, or at least a letter editor's note, which says, "Whilst a consultant-led A&E unit would close, the RHCH will retain an urgent treatment centre, which the Trust says will deal with 60% of the cases that go to A&E.
This letter is from Leslie Stanley in Winchester. Enjoyable. I spent a really enjoyable evening at the Jubilee Hall, Kingsworthy, where the exuberant members of the Worthy Players put on Dick Whittington and celebrated 50 years of the group. Their enthusiasm rubbed off on all the audience, who were happy to participate, and put a smile on my face as I left. Thank you to the members for all their hard work. And that's from Leslie Stanley in Winchester.
And this letter is entitled Handy Hub? From Esther Hack. I don't really understand why the City Council have decided to approve an EV hub at Three Maids Hill, chronicled December 14. I'm hoping to get an electric car and have no facilities for home charging. I will, probably like most busy people, want to charge it while doing something useful, going to the library or shopping. Existing car parks are the obvious place for EV charging. I don't have time to drive out and sit around in a restaurant at Three Maids Hill, however nice. All these proposed facilities would have a large carbon footprint when existing car parks and facilities would better serve the purpose. Furthermore, it's enlarging Winchester, opening the door to yet more development when our narrow streets are already clogged with traffic. And that's from Esther Hack, Stockbridge Road, Full Flood, Winchester.
Hans Klingen writes about poor service. It seems these so-called cleaners to clean our footpaths are terrible. They don't pick up anything most of the time. Our paths are littered with leaves for accidents to happen. The entire council service is awful, and we pay taxes to them. For what? That's from Hans Klingen, North Walls, Winchester.
This letter from Robin Atkins is entitled Tribute to Chris. I knew Chris Pines firstly as a Labour City Councillor and secondly as a good friend for over 25 years. He was always very positive, full of ideas and fun to be with. He made many friends from across the political divide and served his community well for 35 years. He was the ideal mayor who represented the whole of Winchester and carried out all his engagements with humour. He opened the Eel House in Alsford after its restoration in 2008 and kept in touch with Alsford, visiting its sites on many open days thereafter. He also donated generously to the Town Trust. Over the last few years, he was one of the four musketeers, John and Liz Cloyne, Chris and myself, who met every quarter for lunch and to reminisce. These were lively sessions with Chris, who was always in good cheer, even when suffering from cancer. During our last communication in late November, he was very supportive of my dealings with New Alsford Town Council and their failings to make the public aware of the problems with the continuing use of the rugby pitch at the end of the present non-renewable lease. I shall always remember Chris as one of my best friends and hope we can all have a chance to pay our tributes to him. And that's from Robin Atkins, Linley Gardens in Alsford.
Only Option is the title of this letter from Neil Dewey. Concerning the Andover Road closure, City Council leader Martin Todd is reported, December 21, as having said last September, having two main roads running in parallel would be an act of insanity. There are three reasons why keeping Andover Road is the only sensible future option to prevent traffic chaos and misery. Having two or more less parallel main roads must be a better option than one, especially when all the existing major road traffic is added to that eventually from 2,000 dwellings. This is diversity. The more ways available from A to B precludes one local event causing a major hold-up with the additional pollution that results. Inevitably, many times a year, incidents on the M3/A34 will result in official and unofficial diversions along the Andover Road. The mind boggles that addition to the traffic flow, particularly over all those traffic calming bumps, And just where is it stated, and let alone empirically justified, that two parallel roads are nonsense, as he claims? On the contrary, are not two better than one over busy road, with all the temptation to seek out rat runs through Week and across to the Stockbridge Road? And that is from Neil Dewey, Brayside Close, Oliver's Battery.
We need homes, writes Eben Wilson. That several hundred objections to the development of Bushfield Camp have been lodged is depressing. The No Growth Coalition is clearly thriving and still denying the high costs of their worldview. Our young people need homes and jobs. New business needs space. Winchester itself needs newness to retain its enterprising people. And our community needs to pay for its infrastructure overheads, including environmental protections. Our collective services need resources from business and domestic rates. Winchester has little funding to spend on improvements, and it is quite likely that Hampshire County Council will declare bankruptcy in 2024. To achieve this, we cannot live in an unchanging world. The nation has to make some money somewhere rather than kowtowing to middle-class dog walkers and tree huggers. I too love nature, but not at the expense of a self-supporting, solvent community. That letter is from Eben Wilson, Alswither Terrace, Hyde, Winchester.
And this letter from Simon Lever is entitled Bushfield Plan Must Be Cancelled. From the very start of the plans for Bushfield Camp, there were objections. The recently proposed development, much more invasive than initial plans, and attracted many hundreds of objections from Badger Farm and Oliver's Battery residents. A number of organisations with a mission to protect our treasured countryside have also delivered their serious concerns. Damage to the natural environment, including birds and animals, would be irreversible. And thousands of cars? Badger Farm Road is already overcome with traffic. This enormous development must be cancelled for the sake of present and future generations. Our countryside is precious and cannot be taken for granted. And that's from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm, Winchester.
And this letter is entitled We Can't Cope, and it's from Tony Gaster. It seems clear from reading The Chronicle, December 21, that a large number of local people and organisations are against more big development projects in and around Winchester. It would also seem some of the arguments to support development conflict with council objectives. Of course, those owning the sites want to maximise their profit and use any argument to support that position. Not one cogent point has yet been made about traffic and how this might be managed. With the M3 at a standstill morning and evening, and likewise the Romsey Road, even longer, someone needs to seriously study this. A small city like ours simply cannot cope. I just wonder if the City Council takes note of local opinion in making decisions as important as these. And that's from Tony Gaster, Old Kennels Lane, Oliver's Battery, Winchester.
Mike Sherwood writes about a Druid ceremony. A great friend of mine and I recently visited Avebury in Wiltshire and were privileged to watch and to a limited extent participate in a Druid ceremony. I was very much struck by the kind and gentle nature of the Druids and the simplicity of their beliefs, so far removed from the hustle and bustle of life today with its emphasis on technology and material wealth. That letter is from Mike Sherwood, Wrights Close, South Wanston.
That concludes the letters. Next we have the Hampshire Chronicle editorial, and that will be followed by First Person.
And today's editorial comment is entitled Simple Pleasure of a Ride on the Old Buses. As 8 vintage buses pulled into the stands at the Broadway on New Year's Day, you could be forgiven for thinking that you'd step back in time if you ignored the modern cars parked in the middle. The sight of them was ever so pleasing on the bleary eyes of January the 1st. Charity The Friends of King Alfred Buses takes advantage of the quiet streets each year and uses it as a chance to give their precious fleet a run. This year was great. The gathered crowds were clearly delighted, and the smell of the diesel and the sound of their engines were a joy to the senses. Scores of people were taking pictures. We bet half of Winchester now has an old bus photo on their phones. Young and old were equally enjoying the day, free to hop on and off and enjoy the simple pleasure of a bus ride. The passion of the volunteers was clear to see, and as the rain set in later in the afternoon, driving these huge vintage vehicles around the city streets was no easy task, but they did it with clear joy. Everybody involved in this project deserves a massive congratulations. What a wonderful way to start the new year in our wonderful city.
And this article from Khalid Aziz is entitled The Last and the Next 12 Months. A time for reflection, New Year. There will be few regretting seeing the back of 2023, and many who welcome 2024 with trepidation. Could the new year be any worse than its predecessor? Well, that all depends. Let's start by looking back. We started last year with the ongoing special military operation waged by Putin on Ukraine. I don't need a ride, I need weapons, said Ukraine's brave Volodymyr Zelensky on being offered safe passage out of Kyiv. He got his weapons, but cruelly not enough. As the new year approached, Zelensky was not just running out of weapons, but of able-bodied men. Britain is doing its bit, particularly by training Ukrainian recruits in the arts of war. They've run out of young men. We're now getting chaps in their 50s, the British officer in charge of proceedings on Salisbury Plain told me. It's really a dad's army. Meanwhile, Putin sacrifices hundreds of thousands of Russia's youth, untroubled by any discernible democratic opposition. Across the pond, the ever-wise Donald Trump, never one to miss a political opportunity, is in his pomp. I can end the Ukrainian war in 24 hours. Just another deal echoing his highly successful meeting with the North Korean dictator. How's that going? I wonder how Trump would deal with the Israel-Palestine debacle. The outrageous massacres and kidnapping on October the 7th by Hamas were apparently backed by the ungodly Iranian mullahs, worried about Israel doing business with the rest of the Muslim world. Netanyahu fell into their trap. Apart from understandable revenge, what has Israel's retaliation really achieved? World pariah status? And doorstep enemies for generations to come. On both these egregious examples, blind ideology and naked power drives the actions of leadership untrammeled by any belief that being in power comes with responsibilities towards all the people, not just those who voted you in. Indeed, your electoral system allowed realistic chance of someone else being voted in. Putin, having plundered post-perestroika USSR, courtesy of his corrupt oligarchs, is feeding his desperate countrymen the promise of restoring Greater Russia, whatever that is. Underpinning all the political actions are the sentinels of what our King described in his Christmas messages as the Abrahamic religions. Sadly, there's not much to choose between Bishop Kirill in Moscow, various assorted rabbis in Jerusalem, or the mullahs of Tehran. Yes, Islam is an Abrahamic religion. They have all lent their weight to those in power. The King urged us to remember the words of Jesus, "Do unto others as you would have done unto you." The Christians of Russia, believing him to be the Son of God, shouldn't have a problem with that. Muslims revere Hazrat Isa, Jesus, as a prophet, so those words shouldn't be difficult for them either. Jesus was a Jew, although to his contemporary rabbis, a troublesome one, who rather than heed the words of their own Torah, centuries more ancient than what was to become the Bible or the Quran, condemned him. So, with the dawn of 2024, what to do? Well, there's a progression from individual to family to society. So it starts with ourselves. After all, we have dominion over what we do. We have to take responsibility. We should speak out against injustice, but with gentleness. All the Abrahamic books exhort us to do this, as do other belief systems. Even those who profess no belief usually accept that there are some universal principles without which we couldn't function as a society, indeed, as a world. Talking of the world, 100,000 attendees at COP28 didn't seem to achieve that much, except increase their individual carbon footprints. Better luck in 2024? We'll see. It does look grim, but the human condition is essentially optimistic. We can and must do what we can at any level. As Churchill said, KBO. Happy New Year.
Right, now to the week's announcements. Winchester Cathedral touch tours for blind and partially sighted visitors. Last year, the cathedral began providing pre-bookable touch tours designed especially for blind and partially sighted visitors. The tour provides a history of the building and stories of some of those who worked there or who were buried in the cathedral. There are opportunities to touch the building stone that will enhance your understanding of the various styles of the architecture of the cathedral. Also, you will be able to touch certain of the cathedral's treasures. The next tour will be on Wednesday, the 24th of January at 11 a.m. That's Wednesday, the 24th of January, 11 a.m. Bookings can be made in person at the box office just inside the cathedral by ringing the box office on 01962 857 275. That's 01962 857 275, or online at box.office at winchester-cathedral.org.uk. That's box.office at winchester-cathedral.org.uk. A number of other What's On items. On Saturday the 13th of January at 2 p.m. at the Theatre Royal, Susie Dent, the lexicographer and so-called Queen of Dictionary Corner, will be talking about the curious, unexpected and downright surreal origins of the words we use every day. On Friday the 2nd through to Sunday the 14th, and then on Saturday the 20th and Sunday the 21st of January, the Otterbourne Theatre Company will be presenting the pantomime The Little Mermaid at Otterbourne Village Hall at 7:30. That's Friday the 12th to Sunday the 14th, and then Saturday the 20th and Sunday the 21st. The Little Mermaid at Otterbourne Village Hall. On Sunday the 14th of January at 5:30 at the Theatre Royal, the band Down for the Count will be performing A Century of Swing. From Saturday the 20th through to Saturday the 27th at the Chesil Theatre at 7:45, there will be performances of Noel Coward's Private Lives. On Saturday the 20th at 7:30 in the Cathedral, a performance of Handel's Messiah. On Friday the 26th of January at 7:30 at the Theatre Royal, the UK's number one jive and swing band, the Jive Aces, will be performing. On Friday the 2nd of February at Winchester College, there will be an evening with the broadcaster Dan Snow on behalf of the Hampshire History Trust. There is more information about this in our further news items later in this recording. And then from Monday the 5th through to Sunday the 18th of February in Winchester Cathedral, there will be a touring artwork entitled Festival of the Moon. Sunrise today was around 8 o'clock in the morning, and sunset will be around at 4:15 in the afternoon. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recordings you will receive from us, please contact us on 01962 861 229. That's 01962 861 229. And this number can also be found on the key fob attached to the memory stick. We now continue with further items of news.
Book sheds new light on friendly invaders. A new book is shedding light on American servicemen in the Hampshire town of Alresford in World War II. Local historian Glenn Gilbertson's latest book, Alresford and the Americans, Are Friendly Invaders, 1943 to 1944, has been published by the Alresford Historical and Literary Society. With the approach of the 80th anniversaries of D-Day, Mr. Gilbertson said it appeared a good time to reflect on why thousands of young Americans were sent to Europe to fight alongside the Allies. The book goes into the background, the author realizing that for many of today's young people, these events are as remote as the American Civil War is for him. But nonetheless, they have shaped our society ever since. The U.S. 9th Infantry Division had already been seen action in North Africa when it came to Hampshire in 1943 to train for the North European campaign. And the book's central section recounts impressions from the American perspective, drawing greatly from the division's History, 8 Stars to Victory by Captain Joseph Mittelman. Instead of their previous experience of a largely resentful, if not hostile, native population, the troops rapidly made many friends and were bowled over by our ancient land. While both sides spoke a form of English, the mutual cultural shocks must have been tremendous. The following chapter covers the highlights of the division's actions from Normandy in June 1944 to meeting the Red Army in April 1945. One of the most effective units, they earned the nickname of the Old Reliables, at the cost of casualties numbering more than twice their normal establishment. Appendices cover the division's commanders, the story of Captain Cogswell and Lady Luck, and the experiences of four Alresford GI brides. Captain Cogswell was a bomber pilot who steered his stricken plane away from the town, crashing near Alresford Pond in 1943. The book, with 68 illustrated A4 pages, is available for £9.99 from Oxley's Bookshop, 6 West in West Street.
Community Station marks 40 years on air. A community radio station, first launched to support patients at Winchester Hospital, is celebrating 40 years since becoming a charity. Winchester Radio has been helping the community since September 1984. The station, based inside the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, is run by volunteers and aims to support people over 50 by promoting what is happening locally, signposting to other charities and services, and reducing isolation. One of the four trustees, Paul Blitz, was one of the founding members and helped design the very first studio. Paul said, "The technology has changed absolutely amazingly. We all work here, we just don't get paid. For some of us, it's quite a job, and it's equivalent to a professional job. We've probably got more listeners than we think, because I keep bumping into people who say they listen. We feel like we're doing something worthwhile." Paul was later joined by fellow tech-minded volunteer Nigel Dallard in late 1987. Paul, Nigel, and current chair Anna O'Brien make up the three trustees, with a combined total of more than 102 years of experience in managing a hospital radio station. Nigel said, "CDs first arrived shortly after I started. We've still got CDs here, but it's all played off the computer now. Way back in the 80s, when I first started Winchester Hospital Radio, and it was on air for about 3 or 4 hours of an evening, and the rest of the time it was Radio 2 being piped around the wards, because if there wasn't a presenter physically here, there was no way for us to broadcast. With the addition of the computer playout system around 2000, suddenly we could broadcast 24 hours a day. It's about giving back and helping folks. Compared with where we were back in the 80s and 90s, it's more community-led radio stations like ourselves that are going to be the only local stations left. Stations like BBC Radio Solent are covering an increasingly bigger area, so they will not be mentioning these other local grassroots charities and services like the ones we are signposting." One of the charity's youngest volunteers, Amber Westley, emailed the charity's chair every year while at school to see if she was old enough to join yet. Amber, a qualified journalist, finally joined in 2019 at an exciting time for the station, when it first became Ofcom licensed, broadcasting on FM across Winchester and surrounding areas. Despite the commitment of around 30 volunteers who keep the station going, every year is still a struggle to get enough funds to cover licensing fees, equipment and running costs. Anna O'Brien, who joined in 1998, said, "Money is the biggest challenge. We are a small grassroots charity. Sometimes we talk to people and they are amazed that we are all volunteers, but we have so many committed people who make it work. Where government and people are shorter of money, the places you can apply for funding are shrinking and more good causes are competing for the same pot. People wouldn't have to give us very much to make it sustainable, so even if people were only giving us a little, that would help keep us on air. It goes straight back into the radio. We only spend money if we have to. In a small charity, you have to watch the pennies. When a listener gets in touch and tells us the difference we have made, it's the best thing. Keeping people connected is such a key thing."
Households put on flood water alert. The risk of groundwater flooding is rising in parts of Hampshire. The Environment Agency has issued alerts for several towns and villages across the county, saying that flooding is possible. Groundwater flooding is when water rises up from the underlying chalk rather than from rivers or streams. Cellars are most at risk. Alerts are in place for Bramdean and Cheriton, Hambledon, Hursley, King Somborne and Little Somborne, and the Meon Valley, and Twyford and Hensting. More information about the flood alerts, including what to do in the event of flooding, can be found on the Environment Agency website.
Putting the quilts together. Following the final community sewing day and closing date for block donations, a team of volunteers from the Wessex Quilt Makers has begun the intricate process of making the memory quilts. With more than 120 blocks received, the volunteers expect to be able to complete at least 5 quilts, which will be displayed at the Ark for the public to view between January the 12th and the 14th. After a busy 2 months of community sewing days, we collected so many special stories from across our community. In the last few weeks, it's been quite thrilling to see the individual blocks come together in beautiful pieces of art, thanks to the efforts of our volunteer quilt makers, said Fabric of Winchester project manager Mady Cowell. We can't wait to share these with Winchester at the free exhibition at the Ark. Launched in September, the project has captivated Wintonians, built on creativity and storytelling, while highlighting the rich diversity of the district. 18 community and national partners have supported the Fabric of Winchester. Once the exhibition has concluded, the quilts will be donated to the Winchester Hospice, a gift from St. John's Winchester and the community in recognition of the work the hospice does, providing palliative and end-of-life care. The project has highlighted the power of individual and collective stories, shining a light on the St. John's Winchester Dementia Support Service, which has helped more than 320 individuals living with dementia since October 2022. With the support of individuals, corporates and foundations, St. John's Winchester hopes to expand the service to ensure that no call ever goes unanswered and that life-changing support is always accessible and freely available to those in most need.
City's New Year Honours Joy. 7 Winchester heroes have been recognised in the New Year Honours list this year. Special honours are given to people who make outstanding contributions to their community and the country, with the New Year Honours acknowledging 1,227 people in the UK. They range from politicians, musicians and actors to senior diplomats and elite sports stars. Local heroes are also recognised for their hard work for charity and the community each year. Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said, "The New Year's Honours list recognises the exceptional achievements of people across the country and those who have shown the highest commitment to selflessness and compassion. To all honorees, you are the pride of this country and an inspiration to us all." Honoured from the Winchester district and the surrounding area are members of the Order of the British Empire, MBE, Helen Margaret Leadbitter for services to young carers, Winchester, Jeff Stelling for services to sport, to broadcasting and to charity, Bishop's Waltham, the Reverend Professor Elizabeth Bridget Stewart, lately Deputy Vice-Chancellor, University of Winchester, for services to higher education in Winchester. Then medalists of the Order of the British Empire, BEM, Tina Ruth Coldham, for services to inclusive patient and public involvement in research, Winchester. Rachel Greenwood, for services to the community in Bramdean and Hinton Ampner, Alsford. Kirsty Elizabeth Tilley, Programme Manager, Defence Science and Technology Laboratory, Ministry of Defence, for services to defence and to inclusion, Winchester. And then there's the King's Police Medal, KPM, to Annabel Sarah Jane Berry, lately Superintendent in Hampshire. Also, an award for services to wildlife and to the natural environment has been given to the chief executive of the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Wildlife Trust in the King's New Year's Honours List. Deborah Tan was made an MBE in recognition of her achievements during a 30-year career in nature conservation.
TV historian Dan's fundraising drive. An award-winning TV presenter and historian is coming to Winchester to give a talk to raise money for the Hampshire History Trust. The Trust, organisers of Winchester Heritage Open Days, is holding the event called An Evening with Dan Snow on Friday, February the 2nd at Winchester College. Dan has recently been announced as a patron of Hampshire History Trust. The Trust says Dan, who has been captivating audiences over the past two decades with his talks and podcasts, will be sharing his wealth of memorable anecdotes from his career as a historian and broadcaster in this engaging and thought-provoking talk. Dan is well known for his contributions to historical programmes, and his work has been seen across a wide range of television series, including Dan Snow on Lloyd George, My Great-Great-Grandfather, Pompeii, The Discovery with Dan Snow, and Locomotion, Dan Snow's History of Railways. Dan started his History Hit podcasts at History Hit in 2015, and it has become the UK's number one history podcast, covering a range of topics. Dan was awarded an MBE in 2019 for his impact on history education. Nikki Gottlieb, chair of Hampshire History Trust, said, "We are very excited to have Dan joining us to share his love of history in what is sure to be a very enjoyable evening. As an organisation, we receive no regular funding, and as Heritage Open Days events are all free to attend, the opportunity to hold a fundraising event is very important to help fund our future projects and activities. This event is supported by Winchester College. Hampshire History Trust was set up to promote and advance the rich and diverse history and heritage of the county and to run free and low-cost educational projects for the public benefit. Hampshire History Trust organises Winchester Heritage Open Days every year, a 10-day free festival of history and heritage centred on Winchester but also extending into surrounding towns and villages. It also runs a podcast channel, Hampshire Hist Bites, which offers everyone the opportunity to delve into the past. Tickets cost £15 and can be booked via Eventbrite. Doors open at 6:15 p.m.
Heritage campaigner hoping for success in banner offer. A heritage campaigner hopes he's getting close to success in his quest to get a historic banner installed in a medieval monument in Winchester. Edward Fennell aims to place a banner in Hyde Gate that portrays part of a 10th century charter for Hyde Abbey from King Edgar. Mr. Fennell of nearby Egbert Road is heartened that the Liberal Democrat-run council is looking to renovate the gateway to the monastery. A former Times legal journalist, in 2010, Mr. Fennell was one of the organisers of Hyde 900, which celebrated the founding of Hyde Abbey, the last known resting place of King Alfred the Great. Mr. Fennell has offered the City Council the banner of the Golden Charter of New Minster, stroke Hyde Abbey. It was made for the British Library for its 2018 exhibition, Anglo-Saxon Kingdoms, stroke Art, Word, War. It was used on the front cover of the catalogue, and the banner itself hung over the entrance to the British Library during the exhibition. Mr. Fennell said, "It's completely weatherproof and by chance or fate has the perfect dimensions to fit into Hyde Gate. It would have cost hundreds, if not thousands, of pounds to print. It illustrates the handing over to the new minster by King Edgar in 966 of its new royal charter. This is, in effect, the founding charter for Hyde Abbey. When New Minster moved to Hyde, the charter came with the monks and was held for almost 500 years within yards of the gateway. In an email to the city councillors, including leader Martin Todd and John Tippett Cooper, Mr. Fennell wrote, "After the London exhibition was over, I negotiated with the British Library for a transfer of the banner to the people of Winchester for public display. There is only one location which is appropriate, the Hyde Gateway itself. All it requires to display it is a maximum of 6 screws. The eyelets are already in place. Nothing could be simpler. So this is my final attempt to offer it to WCC for free. I cannot possibly see how or why you would turn it down." His efforts have the support of eminent academics. Professor Simon Keynes of Trinity College, Cambridge, in an email to Mr. Fennell said, "King Edgar's charter for the new minster is one of the most extraordinary and beautiful books to survive from the period. It shows the crowned King Edgar from 959 to 975 in the middle, holding a book, i.e. the charter, which is in the form of a book, in his left hand, and gesticulating towards Christ above, supported by 4 angels, Mary to his left and Peter, with his key, to his right. There is no other charter like it. It was, as you say, the foundation charter for the new minster, dated 966. And, of course, the new minster became Hyde Abbey, so nothing indeed could be more appropriate. It fully deserves and needs to be kept."
Mayor thanks residents for community service. A long-term Stanmore resident was thanked by the Mayor of Winchester for his services to the community. Rod Youngman was presented with a certificate by the Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Angela Clear, last month. Mr. Youngman, 81, regularly cleans the plaque at the foot of a 100-year-old beech tree. The tree was planted in Stanmore by Edward VIII, the then Prince of Wales, who would later become King, to mark the launch of the council estate. The Mayor of Winchester and Mr. Youngman were joined by Council Leader Councillor Martin Todd and Ward Councillor Councillor Jamie Scott for the presentation by the tree, just outside Mr. Youngman's house. November the 7th marked the centenary of the tree planting, and Winchester's flagship council estate, which was renowned for having front and back gardens and green spaces.
New book sheds light on Roman Winchester. A new book is shedding light on the secrets of ancient Winchester. Venter Belgarum, Prehistoric Roman and Post-Roman Winchester, is the latest in the groundbreaking Winchester Studies series and draws on discoveries made as far back as the 1960s. The authors are Francis Morris and Martin Biddle, who has been involved in archaeological excavations in Winchester for 60 years. A charity, the Winchester Excavations Committee, is launching the book at the School of Art on Wednesday, February the 7th. Professor Biddle spent years since the 1960s undertaking digs that uncovered Winchester's Iron Age, Roman, Saxon and medieval history. This is the first of the Winchester Studies series to publish detailed site reports of the field and urban archaeology from his excavations. Professor Biddle's work at Winchester has been recognised as one of the most important archaeological studies in the world. In proposing him for Freedom of the City in 2010, Councillor Therese Evans said, Probably his best-known achievement was the excavation of the Old Minster on the Cathedral Green, where he and his wife Bertha achieved the first near completion of an Anglo-Saxon cathedral and changed perceptions of Winchester's archaeology. His work showed the importance of this site in the history of the city and of the Kingdom of Wessex. He also showed how the ruined Roman town was developed into a royal and ecclesiastical centre in the 7th to 9th centuries and became the central place in a network of defended burghs, which provided protection from the Danish attacks which had overrun much of the country. The book comes in two volumes and is 1,410 pages and costs £240. An e-version is available for £16. It is published by Archaeo Press Archaeology. The early reviews have been positive. Martin Hennig of Wolfson College, Oxford wrote, "The single fullest and most impressive volume on any Roman town, bringing together the observations and excavations over three centuries. A volume of prime importance to everyone interested in Roman Britain. It should be on the shelves of every archaeological unit and indeed every excavator."
Congestion concerns. Winchester's main bus operator has highlighted the need to tackle traffic pinch points that impact its services. It's looking at several problem spots that affect its buses, including City Bridge, North Walls, City Road, Romsey Road, and Station Hill. The company is working with the County Council to investigate ways that buses can be given priority. Rob Vince, Stagecoach Business Development Manager, writing in the December edition of Trust News, the newsletter of the City Winchester Trust, said congestion in Winchester has not improved, even though the COVID pandemic has led to more people working from home. Stagecoach is working with Hampshire County Council on a bus service improvement plan to reduce journey times and improve reliability. Mr. Vince said the company is aware of pending development with King's Barton underway and other potential schemes such as Bushfield Camp and Sir John Moore Barracks. He said it is imperative that Winchester movement strategy works well for buses and doesn't displace routes and make them less appealing and longer. The central Winchester regeneration area must also provide the best facilities possible for bus users.
Zoo helps bring rare antelope back from brink. Marwell Zoo is celebrating after its long-term conservation efforts helped prevent a rare antelope species from becoming extinct. The scimitar-horned oryx was declared extinct in the wild in 2000, but has now been downlisted to endangered in the International Union for Conservation of Nature Red List, thanks to conservation efforts around the world supported by Marwell Wildlife. The change in status comes following the establishment of a self-sustaining population of scimitar-horned oryx, which has more than 600 animals within Owadi Raimowadi Akim Faunal Reserve in the Central African country of Chad. Marwell's conservation charity helped provide oryx for the new population and was also part of the team which modelled the release strategy. Dr. Tanya Gilbert, head of conservation science at Marwell Wildlife, said, "The change in status of scimitar-horned oryx from extinct in the wild to endangered is a testament to the power of collaborative conservation action and gives us all hope that we can make a real difference and restore nature. The species is still at risk from extinction, but the conservation work in Chad, Tunisia, Morocco and Senegal greatly reduces this risk and has given the species a real chance of recovery. Marwell Wildlife, which manages the World Association of Zoos and Aquariums, that's WAZA, WAZA, International Stud Book for Scimitar Horned Oryx, was awarded the WAZA Conservation Award 2023 this year for its efforts to re-establish the animals back in their habitats in Tunisia. A zoo spokesperson said, "Marwell has worked with the species since the zoo opened in 1972 and, along with Edinburgh Zoo, donated the first group of oryx to the pioneering reintroduction program to Bou Hedmar National Park in Tunisia in 1985. Since then, Marwell has co-managed reintroduction projects to a further 3 protected areas in Tunisia. Since 2011, Marwell has had an expert team based in Tunisia who work with local communities to give local park rangers, vets and students the skills to ensure threatened species have a much brighter future. Professor Philip Riordan, Director of Conservation, said, "Our journey to restore scimitar horned oryx and its habitats is a testament to the power of persistence and belief in the possible."
Long waiting times in A&E. Nearly 12,000 people waited more than 4 hours in A&E to receive treatment from the trust which runs hospitals in Basingstoke, Winchester and Andover. A new report has ranked the NHS trusts where the most people waited longer than 4 hours at A&Es across England between April and June this year. The data has been collated by e-power trucks and online marketing surgery, using figures published by the NHS. Of those who went to A&Es run by Hampshire Hospitals NHS Foundation Trust, 31.4% waited for 4 hours or more to be seen, 11,961 of the total 38,086 patients seen across the 3 months. Chief Operating Officer at Hampshire Hospitals, Andy Hyatt, said, "Like hospitals nationally, we continue to see really high demand for our emergency services. This has at times meant that patients have had to wait longer than we would like to access care. We would like to thank our communities for their patience and our staff for their dedication and hard work." He advised people to consider using alternative services, including NHS 111 online, local pharmacies, or their GP practice if they need advice or help for something that isn't life-threatening, and encouraged people to take part in the consultation for a new hospital for Hampshire.
Science Centre goes green in support of the NSPCC. Landmarks across the UK shone green on the longest night of the year in support of the NSPCC and its Childline service, which is supporting children across the country this Christmas. But in Winchester, something slightly different took place. Due to being in a dark sky reserve, Winchester Science Centre was unable to light up like other supporting landmarks. Instead, its team lit up the centre inside with a showcase of green fire experiments on December the 22nd. The demos used copper chloride and a flamethrower to create vibrant green flames. Gemma Graves, NSPCC Community Fundraising for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, said, We are incredibly grateful to everyone who's helped make these amazing light-ups happen at what can be a particularly difficult time of year for families, children and young people. Not only do the illuminated buildings provide a striking reminder that Childline is a beacon of light for young people in their darkest hours, everyone fundraising with A Walk for Children is making a huge difference and ensuring we can be there for children whenever they need us.
County's £2 million winter help. Hampshire has received more than £2 million from central government to help ease urgent and emergency care pressures this winter. The money has been given from a new £40 million pot for local authorities, which aims to help with social care, speeding up hospital discharges, and preventing avoidable hospital admissions. MP for North West Hampshire, Kit Malthouse, said, "I'm pleased that Hampshire is getting a good chunk of targeted funding to help with urgent and emergency care this winter. This money will come in very useful, whether it is to pay for a carer to visit someone's home and help them with everyday tasks such as getting dressed, providing transport to take people home from hospital, or providing technology to monitor people at home. As well as this extra funding, we have seen healthcare capacity massively increase locally with the new GP surgery at Andover War Memorial Hospital and the Community Diagnostic Centre. The announcement of £40 million funding is in addition to £200 million announced in September 2023, aiming to boost resilience in the NHS and help patients get the care they need as quickly as possible this winter. Hampshire's allocation was paid on Monday, December the 4th.
City nature lovers get back to their roots. Winchester nature lovers blew away any Christmas cobwebs with a walking survey of plants in their neighbourhood. An example of citizen science, the New Year plant hunt was an informal group and concentrated on the eastern side of the city, including St Giles Hill, Alsard Road and Wolvesey Palace. Anna Stewart took part and said 51 species of native or naturalised flowers were seen within 3 hours of recording on Saturday, December the 30th. Around 8 people with various degrees of knowledge of plants joined the hunt, which is supported by the Botanical Society of Britain and Ireland. Anna is also on a mission to encourage the City Council to plant resistant elm in Winchester, and in particular St Giles Hill Park. The St Giles Hill Graveyard, Alsford Road, will be planting resistant elms in 2024. Dutch elm disease wiped out most British elms in the 1970s, but cultivars are being taken of resistant trees. Recently, Andrew Brooks of the Hampshire branch of Butterfly Conservation visited St Giles Hill to see the work that is being done, largely by volunteers, managing the park after years of neglect.
New Indian outlet opens. A new Indian takeaway has opened in Winchester. Madan and Periyar Pandey, who've run Kali Murchi, an Indian restaurant in Southampton for 13 years, opened their new business just before Christmas. Called Desi Accent, the takeaway is located on Waverley Way, Stanmore, and will serve the same food as at Kali Murchi. The business will also provide delivery options and outdoor catering. Madan told the Chronicle, "The idea is we are trying to establish two different businesses. Kali Murchi is a restaurant and takeaway, and Desi Accent will be just a takeaway only. I thought it would be better to create another brand name which runs parallel to Kali Murchi, as the two businesses are very different."
Sea of bottles surrounds bank. A sea of bottles surrounded a Winchester bottle bank following the festive period. Glass covered the area by the full recycling bins by Waitrose in week up until 4 days after Christmas. Winchester City Council collects glass bottles and jars for recycling once every 4 weeks from people's black bins. But Councillor Sue Cook believes this is not enough. Councillor Cook said, No glass recycling at Tesco Winnell, Sainsbury's Badger Farm or at Bar End Recycling Centre. We need more regular collection from the door and recycling glass back at the recycling centres and more places to recycle glass. The glass recycling bins in Wick and at the cattle market have since been emptied. There was a similar scene at the Tesco Express Bottle Bank in Kingsworthy following the bank holiday at the beginning of September. And there's a photograph here, and I must honestly, I have never in my life seen so many empty bottles in one place, ever.
People had a good Christmas. Volunteer puppet group performs at hospices. A puppet group based in Southampton has given a festive performance at Naomi House and Jack's Place. The team of volunteers set up their own stage and sets in the hospices and performed the Christmas story to children, young adults and families visiting. After the show, the puppets went to meet each child and young adult. Beverly Ayres from Praising Hands Puppet Group said, "It was a privilege to visit Naomi House and Jack's Place to share the Christmas story using puppets, music and drama. Praising Hands is a charity made up of volunteers and they have been visiting over 20 schools and a residential home over the last month. It was wonderful to perform at Naomi House and Jack's Place for our final day. It's a very special place and the love and care the staff have for the children and young people is wonderful. Praising Hands has supported Naomi House and Jack's Place hospices based near Winchester for more than 7 years. The puppet group even showed their support during lockdown, where they created a video message for the hospices to share with children, staff and families. Claire Potterton, head of play and activities at Naomi House and Jack's Place, said, "Some of the children, young adults and families that visit our hospices might not be able to go to the theatre. So to have this experience at the hospice is amazing. Thank you for all the years of continued support and we look forward to seeing you again in 2024.
And finally, some further news from Marwell Zoo. After a range of new arrivals over the summer, Marwell Zoo has been picking names for the youngest residents. Three Red River Hoglets were born in July and have been going from strength to strength with mother Lizala, father Kermit and big brother Matonda. The piglets have been given Swahili names, Moja, Mbili and Tatu, which means 1, 2, 3.
Oh.
In August, Marwell announced the arrival of one of the rarest mammals on the planet, a critically endangered African wild ass. Keepers have confirmed that the foal is a boy and has been named Callin, which means silver, to reflect that he is the 25th African wild ass foal to have been born at the zoo. A greavy zebra foal has been confirmed as female. Greavies are named by working through the alphabet in a similar way to meteorologists naming storms. The previous foal was Windsor, born in 2022 in the late Queen's Jubilee year. So previous, I say, with a letter W. The current foal has been named beginning with the letter X and has been called Xyla, X-Y-L-A.
Okay. Nice name.
Marwell also welcomed the second Kirk's Dick Dick ever to be born there, a boy, and they've given him the name Ardan. And the zoo's Sitatunga, which is a type of antelope, born to father Tumnus and mother Winnie, has been given a name that complements his mother's, which is Dubu, meaning bear in Swahili.
Oh.
That concludes our extracts for the week. Our thanks to our editors for selecting the extracts this week, to the copying, dispatch and memory stick preparation teams, and to our readers today, who were Tony Bergstrom.
Goodbye.
John Richards.
Goodbye.
And Jane Rutter.
Goodbye.
And from me, John Parker, goodbye too. Please remember the memory stick as soon as you're able, not forgetting to put your address label inside the envelope. And a reminder that you can also hear Winchester Talking Newspaper on AWAS Community Radio 99.8 FM and digital on Saturdays at 5 p.m.